How does God feel about the shedding of innocent blood?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is Michael Brown coming your way from Seoul, Korea. Thanks so much for thinking of me and praying for me while I'm here. I posted on Facebook yesterday, not sure what time that'll be your time back in the States, but I posted a short video about 45 seconds of some of the worship from the Uprising 2016 conference here in Seoul with young people from about 30 nations worshiping together and singing How Great Thou Art. And, you know, when you're in the midst of young people going after God, you have hope. You have encouragement. Oh, we always have hope in Jesus. But you get more encouraged when you see how many young people are serious about doing the will of God. And before I talk to you about some very serious moral and cultural issues, scripturally and politically as well, I want to encourage your heart by what God is doing among young people around the world. You know, one of the speakers made the comment that young people today are under-challenged, and that's why some of them will look for these radical destructive outlets, even as extreme and deadly as an ISIS. They want to give themselves to something, and they want to give themselves to something that will require something of them. And of course, under demonic influence, they make these horrific demonic fleshly choices. But I've seen it for years now. I remember back in 16 years ago, a young person saying to me, give me a cause and I'll die for it. Give me a cause and I'll die for it. They want to live for something. They want to live with a purpose. And of course, this is not universal for all young people, but I believe in many, many ways that when young people hear the real gospel challenge, not some watered down version, but when they hear the real gospel challenge, that they will surrender themselves and say, here I am, Lord, send me, use me, whatever the cost, whatever the consequences. Also, just on another note, you know, you fall asleep, you wake up the next day, and there's another report of an Islamic terror attack. I get off a plane after 12, 14 hours with no Wi-Fi. Boom, there's another report. And then reports just as sickening. From Japan, a man going into a home for the disabled and slaughtering people there. I mean, so much bloodshed. Now, again, I understand. I've said it many times. It's not the bloodshed you'd have, say, during a war, World War II or World War I or the Civil War. And there have been plenty of times in human history where there has been proportionately a much, much greater loss of life than what we're seeing today. But we're reminded moment by moment of the violence of the world. We're reminded moment by moment of the sinfulness of the human race. We're reminded moment by moment of the desperate need for God's intervention. So we see these things happening. They're tragic. They're painful. They're agonizing. But our response is not hopelessness. Our response is pain that drives us to prayer. And we say, Lord, hallowed be your name. May the whole world learn to recognize who you are and worship and reverence and honor you alone. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Surely that's the solution. You say, how do I pray for the Middle East? Lord, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. How do I pray for Europe? Lord, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And a few hours back, I posted this on Twitter and Facebook. If France doesn't wake up after its children are slaughtered in the streets, and after a priest has his throat slit, basically beheaded in his own church in front of his congregants, if that does not cause France to wake up in an extreme way, what is going to get France to wake up? Lord, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. All right, we're going to come back and look at what the Bible says about a very important subject, which is going to lead me to a very important question. Can you, as a follower of Jesus, vote for a pro-abortion candidate? We'll tackle that right here on The Line of Fire as we come your way from Seoul, Korea. Thanks for joining us. God.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming your way from Seoul, Korea. I trust you enjoyed the interviews that we aired yesterday and the day before. We've got one more with my dear friend Scott Volk. We recorded this right before leaving for Seoul, Korea. So you'll hear from me and Scott tomorrow. I think you'll really enjoy the Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. But every day I'm coming away from Seoul, so we're also giving you updates from Korea. And today the entire broadcast right here from Seoul, Korea. We're going to talk about something very important in God's sight and very important right now in the presidential elections, the issue of abortion, but more particularly the question of the shedding of innocent blood. Now, if you've had an abortion and you have never received forgiveness from God and it remains an open wound in your life, I want you to know Jesus died for that sin as well. And if you'll come to him and say, God, forgive me for what I did. I now realize it was sin. I now realize it was wrong. I now realize I took the life of a child that could be here in this world right now. Forgive me. He will forgive you, but please understand, it's not forgiveness so you can go and continue to live your own life. It's forgiveness, meaning, God, I've come to the end of myself and I'm asking you to forgive me. I want to be your child. I want to live for you. I want to serve you. Jesus died not just to save you from hell, but to save you from sin. Jesus died not only so that you wouldn't be lost, but that you would belong to him and live for him. Salvation is salvation from sin to service of God. And if you'll say, God, forgive me, give me a brand new start. I believe Jesus died for my sins and rose from the dead. Forgive me, wash me clean, and give me a brand new life in you. He will forgive you that instant. He will wipe away the guilt. I assure you in Jesus that that little one that was aborted, you'll get to see again and enjoy forever. But right now, the urgent thing is to get right with God in this world. So if you've had an abortion, maybe as a believer, you know that you're forgiven. You did it before you knew the Lord, but it comes back and haunts you. Say, God, remove the stain fully. Remove the stain fully and use me as a pro-life vessel. Use me as one to bring life and hope and encouragement to others. Let's put aside for a moment the issue of abortion. And let's look at shedding innocent blood. Shedding innocent blood. What does Scripture say about this? We recently posted a video, Are All Sins the Same in God's Sight? If you go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, just check on the latest videos, you'll see that. Are all sins the same in God's sight? Some would argue yes. I mean, Jacob, James tells us that if you've broken one commandment, you've broken them all. Paul writes that the wages of sin is death. Jesus says whoever commits sin is a slave to sin. It might give the impression that all sins are equal in God's sight, but that is certainly not the case. Jesus in Matthew 23 speaks about the weightier matters of the law. Yeah, good that you tithe on the smallest items, but you've neglected justice, mercy, and faithfulness. And if you said, okay, if I had to neglect one or the other, if I neglected justice but remembered to tithe, or I neglected tithing but remembered justice, which is more important? Yeah, justice is more important. Justice is more important. But Jesus said, yeah, you should tithe too, but justice is more important. What about the idea of blasphemy of the Spirit being an unpardonable sin? Willingly and knowingly attributing the works of the Holy Spirit to the devil, hardening your heart to that degree. Obviously, that sin is more serious than other sins. What about John, 1 John telling us that there are some sins unto death? There are obviously heavier consequences for some sins. Why did some sins in ancient Israel require the death penalty? And others say if you ate something unclean, it didn't even specify a punishment. You know, you'll be flogged or you'll be stoned. No, it wasn't anything like that. Because some sins are more serious than other sins. And in John the 19th chapter, Jesus tells Pilate that those, the Jewish leaders who delivered him over to Pilate, had committed the, quote, greater sin. Pilate was acting within his authority to sentence Jesus to the cross, although wrongly so. But those who turned Jesus over to Pilate were going beyond their authority. Now, if you go through the Scriptures, you'll never find it written. Nowhere in the Bible that God destroyed a nation, let's say, because the people did not always have the kindest thoughts towards each other. No, that wasn't it. When God judged Israel, for example, it was gross idolatry and shedding of innocent blood and all kinds of immorality. It was serious acts of injustice, serious acts of immorality, serious acts of idolatry that brought that level of judgment. When God told Israel to wipe out the Canaanites, there was a wickedness that had reached a certain level because of which God brought judgment. And one of the sins that God hates the most in Scripture is the shedding of innocent blood, meaning human blood. Why? Because human beings are created in the image of God. Genesis 9:6. Human beings are created in the image of God, so whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall his blood be shed, because that person was created in the image of God. It is in that sense an assault on God himself. And that's why Numbers 35 tells us that bloodshed pollutes the land. And the only way to remove the defilement is by the blood of the one who shed the blood in the first place. Now, we can discuss capital punishment another day. That would be based on that principle. You take a life, you forfeit your life. But the thing I want to focus on is that God said, for example, in Jeremiah 15, that he would not forgive what Manasseh did. Manasseh repented, and on a personal level, God forgave him. But the national sins that he led Israel into were so severe. In particular, the shedding of blood until it reached the horse's bridle. Yeah, it's hyperbole, but it's saying there was a river of blood running through Jerusalem, innocent blood, because of Manasseh. God said, I have to judge that. I have to judge that. I mean, what would you think of a judge after, let's say the mass murderer in France who went with a tractor trailer and mowed down over 80 people, including 10 children and scores injured. And let's say he survived the attack. And then he appeared before the judge and said, Judge, I'm really sorry. And the judge said, you know, that's okay. We're a merciful people. Go your way. There'd be outrage. There must be justice. There must be justice. You cannot have a just and right society if there is not justice. Even if you forgave someone on a personal level, there must be justice. Otherwise, society will completely collapse, and there is no rightness and wrongness any longer. But not only was that sin, that in general, the shedding of innocent blood, such a horror, but there was one sin in particular that Israel was guilty of, because of which God said to Jeremiah, I'm going to bring judgment on Judah and Jerusalem. Jeremiah 19, 4 and 5, the people of Israel, the people of Judah, worshipped idols and, quote, they filled this place, speaking of Jerusalem, with the blood of the innocent. They have built the high places of Baal to burn their children in the fire as offerings to Baal. Something I did not command or mention, nor did it enter my mind. Jeremiah 7, 31. This is again why God says that he was going to bring judgment on Judah. They have built the high places of Tophet in the valley of Ben-Hinnom to burn their sons and daughters in the fire. Something I did not command, nor did it enter my mind. This is something that gets singled out in particular. The slaughter of children to these deities, to Molech or to Baal. Yes, it literally happened, passing children through the fire. You say, what exactly does that mean? I'll read in the next segment, I'll read a description to you of what actually happened from what we know, the traditions that were passed down in the slaughter of these babies. But if you just stop for a moment, you read those verses, staggering verses, you read those verses, And then you go to image of aborted babies. In fact, go to my latest article about abortion and voting for a pro-abortion candidate. And I have a link, and it's just to a page on a Google search just of aborted baby images. Just look at those and ask yourself, how does God feel about the shedding of blood of those innocent ones? And remember, the shedding of the blood in abortion in terms of numbers of children being slaughtered in the womb so dwarfs whatever happened in the ancient world and burning of children to Molech. You say, does it require an even greater hardness of heart to have a child and then to sacrifice that child. In other words, you see the child, you're playing with the child, and then you sacrifice the child as opposed to putting to death the baby in the womb. Yeah, I would say that it takes an even greater hardness of heart, but we're simply talking about degrees of horror here. We're simply talking about degrees of sin here. So let's not minimize the one because it may not be quite as bad as the other. The same culture that's quick to kill a baby in the womb will be quicker to kill a baby outside of the womb. And these are serious, weighty issues that we must deal with as we come to vote. I would rather not vote at all. If I was unsure of one candidate, but I knew the other candidate was pro-abortion, I would rather not vote at all than have the possibility of voting for a pro-abortion candidate as a follower of Jesus.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We continue today from Seoul, Korea. Michael Brown, so glad to be with you, and thanks for being such faithful listeners as we tackle the painful, difficult subject of the shedding of innocent blood, abortion, and how we should vote accordingly. I got a call some weeks back. I said, listen, I'm not going to argue with you. I just want to hear from you. Give me any possible justification for voting for Hillary Clinton. If the elections were today, I can guarantee you I would not vote for Hillary Clinton. Or if Bernie Sanders had been the candidate, would not vote for him. Would I vote for Donald Trump? I'm still giving that prayerful thought, but I certainly could not vote for Hillary Clinton. And you say, well, if you don't vote for Trump, it's a vote for Hillary. No, actually, it's not, because it's not a vote for her. Let's say she has 1 million votes and Trump has 1 million votes and I don't vote. She still has 1 million. Okay, so let's just get the math right there. But I would like to be able to vote for Donald Trump. At this point, I remain undecided, but certainly continuing to pray with an open heart about it. But I certainly could not vote for Hillary Clinton. So I asked callers to give me a reason, justification for voting for Hillary Clinton. And one said this: look, I don't believe in abortion either. I'm not pro-abortion. But let's face the fact that that doesn't change. It's not going to change by whoever's elected president. It's not. Because we had Reagan for 8 years and that didn't change things. And then we had Bush Sr. and Bush Jr. 12 years and that didn't change things. So, you know, that's going to change other ways. So I'm going to vote for a candidate based on other issues. And it was a friendly call. I appreciate it. It was a Christian call. But fundamentally, here's why I reject that reason. And again, I didn't get into a debate that day because that was not the purpose of asking people to call. But number one, if we had pro-life candidates all the way through, if we didn't have 16 years of Clinton and Obama, and we just had that 36-year period of Reagan, Bush, and then pro-life candidates, and let's say some of them were stronger pro-life candidates than, say, Bush Sr., for example, where would we be today? Who would be on the Supreme Court? Roe v. Wade would well have been overturned by now. And what about the presidents using their position as a bully pulpit to advocate their views, as opposed to our current president saying, you know, God bless Planned Parenthood? You'd be using your bully pulpit to stand up for what's right, to have Planned Parenthood fully defunded, and so on and so forth. So if we had pro-life candidates all the way through, things would look different. And with each of the candidates, there were advances for the pro-life cause under Reagan. Limited, but there were definitely advances. Those then were immediately overturned. Once you had a pro-abortion candidate like Bill Clinton, and whatever advances there were that had taken place under Reagan Bush, they then got reversed. And let's also remember that there continues to be progress by state legislatures and governors and things like that as they stand for life. So who we vote for does make a difference when it comes to the unborn. But let's go further. If I'm voting for a candidate who says, I am pro-choice right up to pregnancy, right up to delivery. You know, Hillary Clinton's basic position is if there is a valid reason for women to have abortion right up until the 9th month to have it. Yikes. What horror. What an absolute horrific position. You look at the DNC abortion platform, which is their most extreme ever. Compare it to the Republican platform, which is the most conservative ever. And just tell me how, as a follower of Jesus, you can vote for a candidate who advocates the shedding of innocent blood in the womb. That is the best friend Planned Parenthood's ever had running for the presidency. Your name is on that. You say, man, you're laying a guilt trip on you. I want to make you reconsider. If you are one that historically has voted Democrat because you think, well, they have better policies for the poor, which I would contend with, by the way, but well, I think they have better social policies, or I believe they're more balanced when it comes to war, or I think they're stronger on economy, whatever. And those are all points for discussion. The fact that they are so militantly pro-abortion, that alone would mean I can't vote for them. So let's look at it like this. If it was during the days of slavery, I don't care if the pro-slavery candidate was strong on 10 other issues. I could not vote for that candidate because they were pro-slavery. I couldn't. I couldn't in good conscience. It's the same with abortion for me. It remains the same. I want to challenge you. You say, I can't vote for Donald Trump. Fine. Maybe you just vote for the congressional races and governor in your state if they're up for election, or you know, wherever things fall. Maybe that's what you do, and your local representatives. Maybe you vote for a third-party candidate. I'm not happy with the libertarian position, which is basically, hey, it's controversial, we stay out of it. No, I don't believe you should stay out of it when you're talking about a fundamental justice issue like this. I believe you just stay out of it. But all that being said, when we know how God feels about the shedding of innocent blood, and when there's no more innocent blood than the blood in the womb, I don't see how we can say, Jesus, I give myself to you, and I know how you value life, and I know how you care about the innocent and the unprotected that can't fight for themselves, and yet I'm going to vote for a candidate that's militantly pro-abortion. I don't get it. Reconsider. I'm urging you to reconsider. So Rashi, who is the foremost medieval Jewish commentator, says that this is what happened when children were offered up to the god Molech. He said that Molech was made of copper. So the idol would be like sitting there, you know, hands spread out with you know, its belly kind of sticking out, you know, a platform, I should say, leading up to the belly. So Molech, which was made of copper, they would heat it up from underneath it with its hands spread out and heat it. And they would place the child on his hands, others kind of like on a platform, you know, be right in the middle of the statue. They would heat it up from underneath with its hands spread out and heat it, and they would place the child on his hands, and he would be burnt and moan, and the priest would beat drums so that the father should not hear his son's voice and take pity. What a horror. What an absolute horror. That's what happened. And God judged Judah for that. God judged Judah for that. Friends, I urge you to reconsider your position. If you are one who has voted for Democratic candidates for other reasons than this, I urge you to ask, do you want to be complicit in the shedding of innocent blood? Do you want to stand with a party with a militant pro-abortion platform? I want to urge you to reconsider that. I am not advocating that you vote Republican. I'm not advocating that you vote for Donald Trump. I'm advocating that you do not vote for a pro-abortion candidate like Hillary Clinton. That being said, where we have sinned and where we need mercy, we need to understand God's grace. So if you haven't taken advantage of this week's special resource offer, I strongly encourage you to do so. It is our grace package here in Seoul, Korea. I can't have much of a conversation with anybody without Hypergrace coming up and people thanking me for the Hypergrace book and saying how important it is, especially leaders from Singapore and Asia where the message has spread so dramatically. The book Hypergrace and Grace Controversy, those two books, plus my teaching on God's true grace, plus so an audio full teaching on God's true grace, and then my DVD on the grace of God and true grace versus hyper grace. You'll be blessed, you'll be encouraged, you'll be edified, you'll be grounded in grace and grounded in truth. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, coming your way from Seoul, Korea, talking about the shedding of innocent blood. Since abortion is such a major issue between the parties, since the Republican platform is diametrically opposed to the Democratic platform, the question arises, since God does hate the shedding of innocent blood, where does that leave us when it comes to voting for abortion? Many of you saying that's a no-brainer, that's obvious. Of course, we don't vote for a pro-abortion or, quote, pro-choice candidate. For some, it's not so clear. I hope to make it clear to you today on the broadcast. And I've got some quotes from Mother Teresa, some powerful quotes that tie in with the larger culture of death in America today. So I want to share some of those with you as well. And then want to contrast the party platforms. And I've got an article on this, since God hates the shedding of innocent blood, can we vote for a pro-abortion candidate? Can we vote for Hillary Clinton? You can read the article by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and you can read the latest article there. All right, before I get into that, here in Seoul, Korea, I mentioned it earlier in the week, but I've had conversation after conversation with Christian leaders who brought up to me the issue of hypergrace and have thanked me for the book Hypergrace. And talking to a leader from Singapore, he was expressing appreciation from Singapore because a key Singapore leader is the world's leading teacher of what we would call hypergrace, a brother in the Lord, but someone who's gone way beyond what Scripture says in terms of grace. And he was telling me how much appreciation there is within Singapore for the Hypergrace book. And then another leader in Indonesia, one of his colleagues was telling me how he's got a massive congregation, I think combined membership over 200 or 250,000 people, and God moving powerfully in this fairly secular Muslim nation of Indonesia. And he was saying that he had 12,000 of his leaders read the Hypergrace book. I mention it because it's one of these subjects where we go to one extreme or the other. Now, I'm not claiming to be perfectly balanced, but after almost 45 years of steady study of Scripture and prayer and seeking God about these things, I do believe that I can steer pretty well down the middle on a number of subjects. In other words, all right, the word's clear on this. Let's dive right for the middle of this river and swim in the middle and avoid the banks on either side. But there's the danger of legalism. On the one hand, externally imposed religion, laws without love, rules without relationship, standards without a savior. And then there is the hypergrace message that no matter what you do, no matter how you live, that you're in the same relationship with God, etc. There is a wonderful scriptural presentation of grace that is liberating, that is life transforming, that is empowering, that is transforming, that is glorious, where you live condemnation-free, resting in God's love 24/7, all while living in a holy recognition of the holiness of God and pursuing holiness by His grace. So this week, our special resource offer, in case you missed it, again, my book Hypergrace, where we quote from all the various teachers, lay out what they say fairly. We lay that out. We get into depth about what the theology says. Then my book, The Grace Controversy, where I answer 12 common questions about grace and make sure you're grounded in grace and an understanding of the Scriptures on this. And then a whole teaching about an hour long on God's true grace. And then a DVD, I believe, about a 30-minute DVD, where you can watch as I teach on these things. So it's a great resource package. And for me, understanding the grace of God has enabled me to walk condemnation-free in Jesus for decades, assured of the Father's love, while I hate sin and seek to walk worthy of God's grace. So find out more by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You will be blessed. We'll be right back.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming away from Seoul, Korea. I'm not taking calls, but we are coming away right here from Seoul. Keep praying for the trip. We appreciate it. God's doing some really neat things. I'll have more to share as I'm speaking more, meeting with more people. I'll have more to share as the days go on. I did post on Facebook about a 45-second clip of young people from about 30 nations worshiping and singing How Great Thou Art. I believe you'll be blessed by it. All right, let's just take a look and contrast the platform of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party when it comes to abortion, all right? LifeNews.com reported this, and I have this all in my article, my latest article, Since God Hates the Shedding of Innocent Blood, Can a Christian Vote for Hillary Clinton? Life News reports this, the proposed Democratic Party platform this year is more extreme than it has ever been, calling for taxpayer funding of abortion and of a repeal of the Hyde Amendment. The Democratic Party platform already supports legalized abortion on demand for any reason up until birth. Quote, we will continue to oppose and seek to overturn federal and state laws and policies that impede a woman's access to abortion, including by repealing the Hyde Amendment. Now, if you're not familiar with the Hyde Amendment, I just want to share that with you. And then I'm going to read a little bit more at length from the Republican platform. So the Hyde Amendment is a provision barring the use of certain federal funds to pay for abortion unless the pregnancy arises from incest, rape, or to save the life of the mother. So otherwise, federal funds cannot be used, or certain federal funds cannot be used to pay for abortion unless it is the pregnancy arises from incest, rape, or to save the life of the mother. And for the Democrats, that is still no good. That must be removed. Now, listen to the Republican platform on abortion, all right? I excerpted it in my latest article, but I actually want to read a bit more of it to you, okay? So here is the position on abortion in the Republican platform. And it's under the category, the sanctity and dignity of human life. Faithful to the self-evident truths enshrined in the Declaration of Independence, we assert the sanctity of human life and affirm that the unborn child has a fundamental individual right to life which cannot be infringed. We support a human life amendment to the Constitution and endorse legislation to make clear that the 14th Amendment's protections apply to unborn children. We oppose using public revenues to promote or perform abortion, or fund organizations which perform or advocate it and will not fund or subsidize health care, which includes abortion coverage. We support the appointment of judges who respect traditional family values and the sanctity of innocent human life. We oppose the non-consensual withholding or withdrawal of care or treatment, including food and water, from people with disabilities, including newborns, as well as the elderly and infirm, just as we oppose active and passive euthanasia and assisted suicide. Republican leadership has led the effort to prohibit the barbaric practice of partial birth abortion and permitted states to extend health care coverage to children before birth. We urge Congress to strengthen the Born Alive Infant Protection Act by enacting appropriate civil and criminal penalties on health care providers who fail to provide treatment and care to an infant who survives an abortion, including early induction delivery where the death of the infant is intended. We call for legislation to ban sex-selective abortions, gender discrimination in its most lethal form, and to protect from abortion unborn children who are capable of feeling pain. And we applaud U.S. House Republicans for leading the effort to protect the lives of pain-capable unborn children in the District of Columbia. We call for a ban on the use of body parts from aborted fetuses for research. We support and applaud adult stem cell research to develop life-saving therapies, and we oppose the killing of embryos for their stem cells. We oppose federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. We also salute the many states that have passed laws for informed consent, mandatory waiting periods prior to an abortion, and health protective clinic regulation. We seek to protect young girls from exploitation through a parental consent requirement, and we affirm our moral obligation to assist rather than penalize women challenged by an unplanned pregnancy. We salute those who provide them with counseling and adoption alternatives and empower them to choose life, and we take comfort in the tremendous increase in adoptions that has followed Republican legislative initiatives. That is what you call a pro-life platform. And to the extent you can then couple that with care for children that are not aborted and constructive ways to help those that want to have their baby but don't know how to provide for the baby, and to empower people to move out of a welfare system trap. I say trap meaning something that was put on people, ultimately not for their good. Then you have a consistent, holistic pro-life platform in every way. So when it comes to war, some say, well, the Republicans are more warmongering. There is a difference between killing terrorists or, say, killing Nazis and killing a baby in the womb. Is there not? Is there not a difference between taking the lives of those who want to murder others and taking an innocent life? Are there no differences there? Is there no difference between the policeman who shoots and kills the terrorist driving that tractor trailer that mows down those innocent people in France? Is there a difference between that cop who kills the driver, in which case he is doing good, he is being God's servant and using the sword to save and protect life? Is there a difference between what he did and what the driver did, mowing down men, women, and children? Of course there is. Not only so, but Hillary Clinton has hardly distinguished herself as a champion pacifist. And you say, yeah, but with war, there are other casualties. There are. But ultimately, with a just war, it will reduce the number of casualties. And look, I am no expert on World War II. And I do not minimize the agonizing question of the rightness of dropping atomic bombs on two cities in Japan, on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. However, many will say that as horrible as a price to pay as that was, it ultimately saved millions of Japanese lives and other lives. I don't want to get into an extended conversation about that, and some of you are picking up the phone to call right now, and I can't take calls here in Korea. You're picking up the phone to call because you want to discuss that. Let's discuss that another time. But even something as massive as that is calculated to save millions of other lives. There is no possible justification for saying, okay, I wanted to have a boy, and instead we're having a girl, so we'll abort that baby. Well, you know, the baby has Down syndrome, and we don't think we're ready for that, so we're going to abort that baby. Yeah, you know, well, we did not intend another pregnancy, and our finances are just tight, and there's no way to bring another mouth into this world, so we're going to do the merciful thing, kill the baby in the womb. Murder of the baby in the womb is never the merciful thing for the baby. And if a child is severely handicapped, we'll leave that to the Lord. If the Lord is going to withhold life and strength and that child won't survive, then let that be up to the Lord. Otherwise, once the baby's born and handicapped, why not kill the baby then? Some have had that same logic. One young woman did that, just abandoned her baby and said, hey, or killed her baby, and said, if it's wrong to if it's right to do it in the womb, why not outside the womb? Didn't that happen this year, just a few months ago? So when you look at the contrast between the Republican platform and the Democrat platform, I do not see, when it comes to abortion, how any follower of Jesus can vote for the Democrat. You say, but there are lots of other issues. Yeah, but in the days of slavery, if you had a pro-slavery candidate, even if that candidate was strong on other issues, would you vote for that candidate? If it was during the Holocaust and you had one candidate who said, hey, let the Nazis kill the Jews, they're vermin anyway, and then other candidates who said, let's fight the Nazis, could you possibly vote for the pro-Nazi candidate? I know that abortion can often be a terribly difficult issue. No, I've never been directly involved with it in my own life or Nancy's life or anyone in our own family. But I've talked to enough people and heard from enough callers of the agony that you've gone through. Some 30 years later, call in tears. I mentioned in the first half hour of the broadcast that some of the most moving calls we've ever gotten in the history of the broadcast are from women who aborted their babies or for a father who encouraged his girlfriend then to abort a baby. They've called in tears 20, 30 years after the fact. I'm not minimizing that. And I say again, there's forgiveness in Jesus. I say again, there's cleansing in Jesus. I say again, if you look to the Lord for any sin committed, including abortion, and say, God, forgive me, save me, cleanse me, I want to be yours, I want to belong to you, He will faithfully do it. But I do want to challenge you. I do want to challenge you. I'm not saying that you should vote for Donald Trump. I'm not saying that you should vote for a Libertarian candidate. I'm not saying who you should vote for. I'm saying who you shouldn't vote for. And that is Hillary Clinton, because she is the most radical pro-abortion candidate we've ever had. Planned Parenthood has never had as good a friend as Hillary Clinton running for the president of the United States. And you say, yeah, but there's so many things I like about her. Hey, that's between you and God. I'm saying, in my view, for whatever it's worth, this disqualifies her from someone that I could possibly vote for. If this was the only issue that I cared about out of 10,000, it would be that important. When we come back, I want to share some quotes with you from Mother Teresa. Powerful, powerful quotes about the sanctity of life.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, Michael Brown. Coming your way from Seoul, Korea. Boy, just been in some great, powerful meetings here and seeing these young people from 30 nations going after God and seeking the face of God and encountering God and saying, Lord, here I am, send me, use me. Is very encouraging to see. I want to spend a few more minutes on this topic of the shedding of innocent blood and how God feels about that and the issue of abortion. If you haven't read my article yet, God Hates the Shedding of Innocent Blood, then can a Christian then vote for Hillary? Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and you'll see it right there on the homepage. Mother Teresa, Catholic leader, of course, addressed the subject of abortion very boldly and very powerfully. In fact, spoke at a prayer breakfast in the presence of Bill Clinton when Bill Clinton was the president of the United States. And she spoke at this prayer breakfast and basically laid into this issue as clearly as possible. And I thought that's some guts and courage to do it right there with this pro-abortion president sitting there. So one of the real issues is we have such a culture of death in America today. We have so much violence. We have so much bloodshed. We have so much fascination with violence. The media that we enjoy is so filled with violence. And, you know, even the celebration of it, from the vampires to the zombies to it's just a crazy death mentality, and the violence of the video games and on and on. And the question's often asked, well, does this go back to the issue of abortion? You say, well, how? Well, because there's a desensitizing, there's a devaluing of life. And with that desensitizing and with that devaluing is something that just spreads through the entire culture. Mother Teresa said this: abortion kills twice. It kills the body of the baby, and it kills the conscience of the mother. Abortion is profoundly anti-women. Three quarters of its victims are women, half the babies, and all the mothers. So could it be now, it's a powerful quote, is it not? Could it be that our indifference to the life of the preborn, really all-out assault on those precious little lives, could it be that that's desensitized us on a national level? Could it be that there's a fine line between killing a baby in the womb and killing a baby outside the womb? Could it be that we're reaping what we've sown, with physician-assisted suicide becoming increasingly acceptable as yet another manifestation of our culture of death? Again, a few more quotes from Mother Teresa. I don't believe she was exaggerating when she said, "America needs no words from me to see how your decision in Roe v. Wade has deformed a great nation. The so-called right to abortion has pitted mothers against their children and women against men. It has shown violence and discord at the heart of the most intimate human relationships." And she also claimed that, quote, "the greatest destroyer of love and peace is abortion, which is war against the child. The mother doesn't learn to love, but kills to solve her own problems. Any country that accepts abortion is not teaching its people to love, but to use any violence to get what they want." And she asked, and perhaps this is one of the most famous quotes of hers on abortion, if we can accept that a mother can kill her own child, how can we tell other people not to kill one another? The view that we have on abortion profoundly impacts our larger worldview and the value of human life. Camille Paglia, she's an outspoken journalist, professor. She's pro-abortion, lesbian, feminist, atheist. But listen to this. She wrote, although I'm an atheist who worships only great nature, I recognize the superior moral beauty of religious doctrine that defends the sanctity of life. The quality of idea and language in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, for example, exceeds anything in grimly utilitarian feminism. In regard to the commandment, thou shalt not kill, the Catechism says, human life is sacred because from its beginning it involves the creative action of God. God alone is the Lord of life from its beginning until its end. No one can under any circumstance claim for himself the right directly to destroy an innocent human being. And she quotes this as well. Human life must be respected and protected absolutely from the moment of conception. From the first moment of his existence, a human being must be recognized as having the rights of a person, among which is the inviolable right of every innocent being to life. Hillary Clinton, a few months ago, got slammed from both sides because she referred to the baby in the womb as the unborn person, and she got slammed from the pro-abortion side. How dare you? How dare you call that fetus a person? An unborn person? How could you do that? And then she got slammed from the pro-life side because she said that unborn person has no constitutional rights. How can you be a person and have no constitutional rights? Friends, I believe that if we can recover the value and meaning and beauty of human life beginning in the womb, and then the importance of every human life, those that seem to have no purpose anymore in society, the very old, that what can they offer? They just need people to help them and just put them away somewhere. The very old, that's how we think of them so wrongly. And then those that have nothing in the natural to offer because of a handicap or a sickness or another limitation, or even the hurting of society, the poor, for whatever reason they find themselves in such difficult situation. If we can recover the meaning of every human life, starting with the baby in the womb, I believe that will go a long way to dealing with our culture of death. So again, if you've had an abortion, this is not the unpardonable sin. Jesus died for that sin as well, and he'll forgive you and he'll wash you clean. If you're his child, but you have this thing hanging over you, I ask him to bring you to a place of freedom from guilt, but now with a holy debt to help bring life to others. And if you don't know the Lord, if you've never really come into the family of God and the weight of abortion is hanging over you because of what you've done, ask God to forgive you for all your sins, including the sin of abortion. Ask him to give you a brand new start and say, God, I want to follow you. If you truly believe Jesus died for you and rose from the dead, you can have a brand new life following him, and you can start with removal of the guilt of abortion. Friends, visit the website askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Check out our latest videos on cutting-edge issues. Check out my latest article again on the shedding of innocent blood and the elections. And keep praying for me here in Korea. I'm eager to give you another report and update tomorrow. But we've been in some great meetings, and I'll share more tomorrow. But God is moving among the young people, and we've got some opportunities, some key connections with leaders and others that could really impact many, many lives. So thanks so much for praying. I trust this broadcast is edified and blessed and helped you. My bottom line today, God does hate the shedding of innocent blood, especially the blood of little children, first and foremost, beginning in the womb.